It is Friday, August 4th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, U.S. President Donald Trump rallies supporters as a grand jury is paneled concerning the Russia investigation.
When you're paneling a grand jury, that generally means you're not slowing down. It means you're ramping up.
We look into the debate regarding transgender personnel serving in the U.S. military, and country music star Faith Hill is the latest singer to report vocal cord problems. It's all ahead. The Wall Street Journal reports special counsel Robert Mueller has decided to use a grand jury as part of an investigation into potential coordination between the Trump campaign for president last year and Russia. The news of the grand jury came out just hours before President Trump went to the U.S. state of West Virginia for a rally. He used the opportunity to downplay the significance of the investigations, often referencing his Democratic opponent in the election, Hillary Clinton.
The Russia story is a total fabrication. It's just an excuse for the greatest loss in the history of American politics. That's all it is. It just makes them feel better when they have nothing else to talk about. What the prosecutors should be looking at are Hillary Clinton's 33,000 deleted emails. And they should be looking at the paid Russian speeches and the owned Russian companies. Or let them look at the uranium she sold that is now in the hands of very angry Russians. Most people know there were no Russians in our campaign. There never were. We didn't win because of Russia. We won because of you.
Now back to the impaneling of a grand jury. International Edition's Lori London asked former CIA officer and attorney Jack Rice why the grand jury in Washington, when a grand jury was already impaneled in nearby Virginia, looking into allegations former Trump National Security Advisor Michael Flynn had improper contact with Russians during the period after Mr. Trump was elected and took office.
Somebody would impanel a grand jury in order to do a series of things. Typically, you use them when you're ramping up an investigation, to subpoena documents, if you needed to interrogate witnesses under oath. And ultimately, and this is generally where you go with this if it's the ultimate conclusion, you use them to seek indictment. So when you're impaneling a grand jury, that generally means you're not slowing down. It means you're ramping up.
So that's what this development basically says to you, is that this investigation is definitely evolving into something very serious? Is this a big deal?
It's a very big deal when Robert Mueller made the decision to impanel a grand jury in Washington, D.C. We know that there was a grand jury in Virginia specifically looking at the issues involving Mike Flynn. If that was the purpose of that grand jury, there would be no reason to impanel a different grand jury to simply look at Mike Flynn. This is not about Mike Flynn, or at least the limited parameters of that previous grand jury. It would be easier just to simply let that one run out. In this case, they've made a decision to have it closer to where all 16 of his lawyers are. And also, I think they're looking at a lot more. This is a big deal.
Does the fact that he has initiated this grand jury mean that he has something, or does it mean that he wants to find out if there is something, from your view?
In my mind, Bob Mueller has made the decision to impanel a grand jury. It's because there's something there. Does that necessarily mean there's enough to indict at this point? Maybe not. But what I do think is there's a kernel of something that needs to be expanded upon, something that has troubled him, something that makes him pause and makes him want to know more and to determine just how far something like that could go. So It is a big deal when you actually take this next step.
It's been reported that Special Counselor Mueller has been hiring attorneys, some of which specialize in international bribery cases. What does that say to you? And also, apparently, he is crossing a red line that President Trump said was a red line, in that he's apparently looking into President Trump and his campaign and possibly family business finances.
First of all, it's fascinating to me that the president actually thinks he gets to set the parameters. He doesn't. No president gets to decide what a special counsel has the right to follow. A special counsel, once you're seated, essentially gets to chase this where it goes. And that's how they work. If you see evidence of a potential crime, you have the right to follow that through. Now, it is interesting to me that we're seeing money. Chasing the money. That's frequently how things would work in this case. What this does suggest to me, however, is they may be looking more closely at Paul Manafort. And the reason I bring that up is because of the millions of dollars that came into his hands from Russian proxies in the Ukraine and his connections and what that may mean. And of course, he was the campaign manager for Trump. So there's a real question there and just how far that goes. Remember, this is all about not the question of whether or not the Russians tried to manipulate the election. They did. What this is about is whether or not Donald Trump and or his associates colluded in trying to help the Russians do that. That's the question. And that's what Bob Mueller is chasing.
We're also hearing about a plan by lawmakers for a bill that would prevent President Trump from firing the special counsel. Obviously, this is a bipartisan effort, too. Obviously, there are concerns that that could possibly happen. What does that tell you on a political level?
That tells me something fascinating. And by the way, that's in both the House and the Senate. And so you're seeing a push in both houses of Congress here. I think it's very clear that Congress is starting to push back. We saw that just recently when they passed legislation about Russian sanctions and essentially forced the president to sign that. That really says that Congress is concerned about this potential relationship between the president and the Russians. They would not have passed this and really shove this down the president's throat if they thought the president wouldn't be the one driving the process. They're driving this, not the president. Their desire and their bipartisan effort to actually limit the president's ability to stop this investigation, frankly, says even more that the president may try to manipulate the investigation itself, not just with what we saw with Comey, not just what we saw with a new FBI director, but what he has said about Jeff Sessions, what he has said about others, what he has said about the Russians, and how he's frankly handled the entire process.
Former CIA officer and attorney Jack Rice, he was speaking with VOA's Lori London. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. So, Andrew, what's going on?
Well, a big speech today at the Department of Justice that's getting a lot of attention. Attorney General Jeff Sessions announcing that the Trump administration is going after the leakers, specifically talking about media subpoenas, leaks of classified information. That was followed up with Dan Coats, the director of national intelligence, saying that we cannot tolerate the leak of classified information. Of course, there's been a lot of leaks about Russia and a whole host of other things out of the Trump administration. The leaks with journalists and media subpoenas, that's drawing a lot of attention and a lot of questions about the protections that journalists have when they release information. As we know, we've talked about before, the Trump administration has what we might call a challenging or contentious relationship with the press, and so a lot of people citing this as another example of that. There's also a lot of concern that if they cut down on these leaks of information, we won't see the real story that's coming out of the White House. There might be a cover-up, or that they might control the narrative of what's happening. But the flip side of that is people talking about the impact on national security. They say that's why we need to stop these leaks, people's lives put at risk. Some saying that it undermines President Trump's ability to govern when he's having to deal with all of these rumors swirling around. But this is an interesting case because it's not strictly along partisan lines. And case in point, a lot of people talking about Virginia Senator Mark Warner. He wants an investigation into the leak of President Trump's conversations with world leaders. They were published by the Washington Post, got a lot of attention as we talked about the dairy people that he talked about.
Right.
Senator Warner, who's a Democrat, which is the opposing party to President Trump, says that President should have a level of classified ability to talk to these world leaders, that it shouldn't be made public, that they should have that luxury. So he says that those leaks should be prosecuted. It's a very interesting, entangled issue here in Washington that goes across party lines, but is getting a lot of reaction today on social media. But Sarah, we talk about all these heavy issues throughout all the week, so I thought we'd end with a fun story today. And we often talk about national this day or that day, or national ice cream day, puppy day, what have you. Today we have an international celebration that's trending on social media, and it's one that I suspect a lot of people will enjoy celebrating. It is hashtag International Beer Day. So a lot of people saying that they're going to go out and celebrate tonight, saying it's very fitting for it to be on a Friday. Just make sure if you do go out and celebrate, do so responsibly and in moderation.
Yes, don't drink and drive.
No, don't do that.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories we're following. The Trump administration is cracking down on leakers. A U.S. congressman is calling for a U.S. military partnership with Eritrea. Paul Kagame of Rwanda is expected to win re-election as his country votes today. And President Trump tells FEMA he'll respond quickly with emergency funds this hurricane season. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
August 20th and September 5th will mark the 40th anniversaries of the respective launches of NASA's Voyager 2 and Voyager 1. Each of the two spacecraft explored Jupiter and Saturn, but took separate paths after doing so. Voyager 1 went on to explore Saturn's moon Titan, while Voyager 2 was sent to be the first spacecraft to visit Uranus and Neptune. Both spacecraft continue to travel further out in space. NASA says Voyager 1 left the solar system in 2012 and is now in interstellar space. Voyager 2 is currently in the outermost layer of the heliosphere, which is described by the space agency as a bubble-like region of space dominated by the Sun far beyond Pluto and other trans-Neptunian objects. The space agency still communicates with the spacecraft every day. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, country singer Faith Hill copes with a medical condition. U.S. President Donald Trump recently announced that transgender people will be banned from the nation's military. He cited medical costs and disruptions that transgender personnel would cause. Meanwhile, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Joseph Dunford, said there is currently no change in the military policy regarding transgenders. Last year, the Pentagon, under former President Barack Obama, ended policies that prevented transgender people from serving in the military. Jody Herman is a policy scholar at the Williams Institute at the UCLA School of Law and co-author of a 2014 study on transgenders in the U.S. Armed Forces. I asked for her response to the Trump announcement.
My reaction was complete surprise. I knew that there had been some debate in the House about access to medical care for transgender service members. However, this call for an outright ban on transgender people serving in the military in any capacity, he said, came as a complete surprise.
And I believe this is something that has not yet been enforced because the Pentagon, from what I understand, it surprised them as well. And, you know, at the moment, it's not even been implemented yet. One of the reasons President Trump said he made this decision was because of the cost of medical care for members of the military who are transgendered. Now, I know in your study, what kind of research have you found in regard to their medical costs?
Yeah, I believe he cited tremendous medical costs, that particular adjective. Tremendous medical costs is not supported by any research that I have seen. In the past, I've worked with employers, including large self-insured employers, meaning they pay directly all the costs of their medical claims. The study that I did with these employers was to assess the costs and benefits of providing transition-related health care in their employees' health benefits plans. And it was generally considered to be a low cost or even no cost in some instances proposition to cover transition related healthcare for their employees. Anecdotally, one employer mentioned to me in an interview that it was a quote unquote drop in the bucket for their overall total healthcare expenditures. So it was considered to be just generally a low cost or no cost thing to do for these employers to provide this coverage for their employees. Also, I know a study that was conducted by the RAND Corporation that tried to estimate the cost of transition-related health care in the military specifically if, under the policy that trans people would be allowed to serve openly and access medical care. And at most, they said it would be about $8.4 million annually, which represents about 0.13% of the total active component health care spending as of fiscal year 2014. So there seems to be a coalescence in the research that this is a very small cost. It's a very small cost to provide transition-related health care.
And what about the number of military personnel who are transgendered?
Well, we did estimates back in 2014 using the best available data that we had at the time. And we estimated that over 15,000 transgender people were serving on active duty or in the Guard or the Reserves. And that would have been about, to divide that up, it would have been about 8,800 active duty personnel and 6,700 in trans individuals in the Guard or Reserves. The RAND Corporation also came out with estimates. Our estimates ended up being on the high end of their range, but we're kind of all in the same ballpark regarding there being thousands of trans individuals serving in the military.
And also, what about, say, in other countries' militaries? How have transgendered people worked in the military, you know, outside of the United States, just as in comparison?
At last count, I heard there were 18 countries that allow open transgender military service. This includes countries like Australia, Canada, Israel, UK. And the RAND Corporation did, as part of their study into transgender military service, looked at the experience of these other countries and also costs and other things. And they found that there was no evidence of any effect on operational effectiveness, readiness, unit cohesion. They just found no evidence that open transgender military service has an impact on any of those things.
Jody Herman, a policy scholar at the Williams Institute at the UCLA School of Law and co-author of a 2014 study on transgenders in the U.S. Armed Forces. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondence, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Problems strike again in the country music concert scene. This time it takes one of our beloved female country icons, Faith Hill. Nikki Strong of VOA 1 is here with all the details. So Nikki, what's happened with Faith Hill?
Well, she's on tour with her husband Tim McGraw. They're doing their Soul to Soul World Tour, and the doctor has just demanded that she takes just 2 days of vocal rest. And 2 days is not a lot, but it's forcing her to cancel her tour stop in Little Rock, Arkansas. So that's a lot of money that's been lost. And neither she nor Tim have commented on the cancellation of the show on their personal social media pages. But the venue has released a statement, and they do say that Tim and Faith adore their fans and are so sorry to disappoint them. That's understandable. And so far, tickets are being refunded. There's no word yet about a makeup date.
Well, artists canceling shows because of vocal cord problems is becoming quite common.
I know. It's wild. Adele did it. Sam Smith, Keith Urban, John Mayer, Jimmy Westbrook of Little Big Town. The list goes on. Some doctors say it's a combination of things. Firstly, record sales are not what they used to be. So artists are really depending on touring to make a good chunk of their income. And so when an artist is also highly successful, there's a lot more that comes along with it. So they have to do more of everything. They have to do more press, more promo. They have to tweet. They have to Facebook. They have to chat. And many times they're touring and recording their next record at the same time, a lot of times at night. So it's very taxing. And on top of it all, a lot of singers just don't take care of their instrument, whether they're on or off the road. So they have to, there's a certain way they have to eat. If they drink at all, you know, if there's any drugs involved, if they smoke, that also impacts their vocal ability. And it becomes just a recipe for disaster.
Well, Faith also hasn't released a studio album in more than 9 years.
Yeah. So even though she's a vet and she's been very active during that time, this is not their first Soul to Soul tour. So she's been performing and she's been singing and she's also has done music. But her and Tim just signed a new deal with Sony Music Nashville that includes a duet album as well as multiple solo recordings. So Speak to a Girl is their first single, and their joint album is supposed to be released later this year. So the hustle, I think, is really kicking in on a higher level. So I think it's imperative that both of them, Faith and Tim, take care of themselves.
It sounds like it. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, you can hear music from both Faith Hill and Tim McGraw on VOA1's Country Hits with Nikki Strong. You can also reach Nikki on Facebook and Twitter at VOA1 The Hits. Thanks, Nikki.
You're welcome.
'Cause that's how you talk to a woman.
And that is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On his recent trip to Estonia, Vice President Mike Pence reiterated America's support for Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania, saying America stands with the nations and the people of the Baltic states and always will. For the better part of the last century, the Baltic nations were occupied by the Soviet Union, which tried to eradicate the identity, traditions, and language of the people of Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. Throughout those years of brutal occupation, the United States refused to recognize the Soviet Union's annexation of the Baltic states. 13 years ago, the Baltic states joined NATO. Today, Estonia is one of 5 nations that meet the NATO benchmark of spending at least 2% of GDP on defense. By the end of 2018, Latvia and Lithuania will join Estonia in meeting this goal. As the U.S. Vice President noted, the specter of aggression from Russia still looms large in the region. At this very moment, said Vice President Pence, Russia continues to seek to redraw international borders by force, undermine the democracies of sovereign nations, and divide the free nations of Europe one against another. President Trump has called on Russia to cease its aggression in Ukraine and will continue to hold Russia accountable for its destabilizing actions. The preference of the United States is a constructive relationship with Russia based on common interests. Russia, too, has said that it would like to normalize relations with the United States. But the President and Congress are unified in their message. A better relationship and the lifting of sanctions will require Russia to reverse the actions that caused sanctions to be imposed in the first place. Be assured, said Vice President Mike Pence, the United States rejects any attempt to use force, threats, intimidation, or malign influence in the Baltic states or against any of our treaty allies. The United States will stand firmly behind its collective defense obligations under NATO's Article 5. As President Trump made clear in Poland, the fight begins with our minds, our wills, and our souls. If we steel our minds, strengthen our wills, and refresh our souls, the West will never, ever be broken. Our values will prevail. Our people will thrive. Our civilization will triumph.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.